Hey guys, welcome to episode 13 of the JV Club. I think we all know that 13 is a very lucky number, and I couldn't be more delighted to have Malin Ackerman as my guest. I'm very excited to promote our web series that we did with Ken Marino and Erica Oyama Marino for Ben Stiller's Red Hour and Paramount and Abominable Pictures. Burning Love, I've talked about it before. I'm talking about it again because it's finally premiering on June 4th. Visit burninglove.com. Malin is in it. An astonishing cast of women are in it. I'm going to be having some more girls who are in that cast on the podcast in weeks to come to kind of help fill that out a little bit, because again, it just was one of the most fun experiences I've had in my life. A couple of the girls that have been on the show have already, I've already aired their episodes and they're on it as well. June Raphael and Natasha Leggero are both on the show as well. So check it out. And then of course, Malin is in a movie called Rock of Ages that I'm sure you guys are familiar with, that opens it next week as well. So I'm indebted to her for doing the podcast. Speaking of indebtedness, Julie and Sean and Paige and Ben and Jonathan and Catherine, some Facebook and tweets and some personal emails that have just been ridiculously wonderful. I got to come up with new vocabulary. Maybe I'll learn another language just so I can express my gratitude in a different, unique way about how amazing your contact back to me has been, guys. And then going back to iTunes feedback, I just wanted to thank some of these folks, the Because Show podcast, The Wonder Kid, Milo K7. I'm again just trying to find ways to pronounce these things and probably messing them up. But Maya and Zuri, Brittany and Emily, Solstress, An American Lost in Germany, which I love the handle of, and my other favorite, Czech Chicken J. Just a few shout outs to you guys. I'll be doing more iTunes shout outs in the future, but love you guys. Love knowing you're out there. I just sniffled. That's kind of unprofessional. But I'm nothing if not unprofessional. And the last thing I wanted to say is that you can check out Malin's old band, the Petal Stones, at the end of this podcast. Their song Poison is playing. I hope you enjoy it. I got a huge kick out of it. And I will hopefully hear from you guys soon, or see you next time on the podcast.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Guys, everybody knows that when you do a podcast, your guest is not required to look radiant. People have shown up wearing, I wish people showed up looking less radiant, because I always look horrible during for one of the podcasts. I'm like, listen, this is audio. This is my chance to really shine as a dirtbag.
Yeah, and you really look like a dirtbag.
I'm a real dirtbag right now. Let's just go with schlubby. I still feel that I'm schlubby. But this particular guest, she's got somewhere to be. We're going to just get right into it with the podcast. Wherever she's going, these are lucky folks, because I opened the door and a radiant Malin Ackerman was standing at my doorstep.
Aw, thanks, Janet.
What a joy. And rightly so, as you should be radiant, because it's your birthday weekend.
It is. Yeah, which and is hence why birthday? I've lost my voice a little bit. So
yeah. So your Friday night was the sort of big Friday birthday moment.
Yes. Yeah, it was. And honestly, like, I guess it's, here it is. It's like, it's getting older. So my big Friday night is like closing down a restaurant.
Yeah. Yes. You know what I mean? It's not like, and then by 5 a.m. we were still dancing, girl.
No, not at all. It was literally like, oh my God, they're putting chairs up on the tables. We made it.
High fives all around.
It was literally like, it was four of us and we know the owners of the restaurant. It's our favorite restaurant here in L.A.
What
it's
is Italian it? Can you
tell? Austria Mama.
Oh, wait. Where's
it
that?
It is so good.
Oh, yeah. On Melrose.
On Melrose.
Oh,
not Austria
so
Mabuca,
good.
But Austria Mama.
Yes. That's
and
the second one. No, that's
the second one. Yeah.
It is the second one.
Exactly. They opened up the first one and they kind of changed partners and whatever. But the mama went to Austria Mama. So the
that's
real mama's in the
adorable.
Kitchen. So we had some nice bottles of wine and then they gave us some dessert wine and then some limoncello. And so, you know, needless to say, I definitely felt it the next day.
But I will say this about Italian food and pasta is that I'm not a huge drinker. So when I do drink, it's very helpful to have carbohydrates because if I'm like, I think I'm just going to have a glass of wine and maybe a little meat and cheese, like, a glass of wine will do a lot to me. But if I'm like, listen, I'm loading in the gnocchi, like suddenly I can go a lot longer and harder. Exactly.
Yeah. My husband's a cheap date too. I love it. He gets buzzed after a beer and I'm like, oh, I'm going to take
it. Hello.
Of you
indeed. And then Saturday you, had a more one-on-one birthday.
Yes. My husband decided that he booked us a table at, he took me to the Little Door on 3rd.
I love the Little Door.
Which is one of like...
And Little Next Door Little Door.
Yeah, the Next Door Little
Charming.
Door. Charming. Is also really great.
Yeah.
But it's some of the most beautiful, like it's, if you want to talk romantic, that's romantic.
Yes.
You just feel like, even if you're in a fight, or you hate the person you're with, you're going to sit down in that restaurant and you're going to just feel love.
I totally agree. It is, those are two fantastic places to go.
Yeah.
Now I want to know where your brunch is because I'm feeling like we're going to be 3 for 3.
Brunch is, it's actually at the Soho House.
Okay.
Which is that membership only kind of place.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful place. Guys, Soho House is a private club. This is maybe the most LA thing that we've talked about of the three, but it's a private club. You have to have a membership, and then there's a lovely, it's like on the top floor of a skyscraper in kind of the Sunset Strip area, and you get beautiful kind of 360-degree views.
Yeah.
And the food's lovely, but it's kind of more about
the beautiful decor. And it's also just kind of, they have that outdoor patio where they have trees on the patio on the rooftop of
Love
LA.
It.
So it's cool that way. I mean, to be really honest with you, that's the only thing that you're missing because it's a lot of like industry people.
And right.
It becomes sort of like a business thing, but it's two friends of ours who have always wanted to go.
Yeah.
And he's an architect. And so he's really curious. We're like, well, why don't we go for brunch? It's really just kind of cool to sit there and, they've got some good brunch. I mean, you can't really go wrong with brunch food, like omelets.
That's true.
If you fuck up an omelet,
you're
then
you're in a
world
of hurt. I would agree.
You really ain't got anything.
I would agree. But that's a really nice destination too. I love that. I mean, the other two that you listed, what appeals to me so much about both of those choices is that while they are certainly well-known, beloved LA places, and it's not to say that they're like, it's a hole in the wall that no one's ever heard of and that no one from the business ever goes to or anything. They feel very family-oriented in the sense that like who runs them
Less
and they're
trendy.
They're,
too,
yeah, and their traditions and their kind of values, and it feels more like a place that you would maybe find in New York or San Francisco where it's like a celebration of the whole experience in a very low-key kind of humble, it's all about the food and the company
especially
kind of
Austria Mama. That's really all about the food. That's like literally the mama's in the kitchen making the sauce. The dad makes the pasta in the morning. The son is there and he's the chef and the maitre d' and like he makes the tiramisu and like everyone has a position. The sister works there and the wife and that you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, and it's amazing. They love each other. They couldn't be sweeter to each other.
Yeah.
You know, I would probably kill myself if I had to work with family every day.
It's a lot. Well, that goes to show like you sort of, it's always interesting to have a window into familial kind of constructs like that, because I think that too, and I have a great relationship with my family, but part of my relationship and maybe part of why it happens to be great for us is that I actually don't see them that often, and it's not because I don't talk to them regularly but I never ever argue with them because there's never an opportunity. I'm always so grateful to be in their presence.
Totally.
So for me, that's what feels like a normal dynamic. And so I see something like that, but then you think like, we talk about, it would be like we would have to change our entire upbringing and dynamic and be thrown into that kind of environment, which
that's
by the way, sounds like a reality show.
Yeah.
Oh, like, ooh, this family has to go and never see each other and they all have to do these other jobs and this family suddenly is all
that
working in a restaurant
like,
together.
You say that to an Italian family and they'd be depressed for
life. Yeah.
Like there's just no, my husband's Italian. And so literally like.
And he's Italian.
He's Italian. Like fresh off the boat.
Yeah.
Did not speak a word of English when I met him. And his family, when they come to visit, it's not just mom and dad. It's mom, dad, sister, her husband, their daughter, and her boyfriend. So we have 6 people in the house, and they don't come for like a week because they spend money on the ticket.
Yeah.
They come for 40 days, which is...
That's how they do it over there too. Where
totally.
It's like, this is our vacation or this is our, you know, we take the time.
Yeah. But the amazing thing about it, what's so different is like, So I'm such an independent person. Like, I've grown up and I'm kind of like, oh my God, get me out of the house as soon as possible. That's sort of like the American traditional or Canadian, you know, you want your independence, you get out at 18 and you know, you're off at school, and then it's really hard to go back and live at home after that.
Yes.
Or if your parents come into your house and they start being your parent, you're like, Mom, I'm 30.
We don't
years
do this
old.
Anymore.
But the difference is, you know, the Italians, especially in the South where my husband's from, they live at home longer because one, there's no jobs, there's no money, and they help put money into the apartment that their family lives in, because it's really just kind of a dire state over there. Yeah. So you just kind of get used to each other. But his family's amazing together. Like, when they come and live with us, they could, if I was concerned, they could stay forever. Like, they're so super easy. You know, wake up in the morning, you smell the coffee, they're already making the ragu for dinner. His mom literally irons my underwear. Now let's just be like, let's just be really candid here. It's a triangle. It's a thong. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing to iron, but she irons and folds them. And I'm like, Fufa, you don't have
so
to do that.
Adorable.
But it's amazing, you know? And his dad is out in the garden gardening. His brother-in-law is an electrician, so he's fixing everything in the house. Like, it's just, you've got all these little worker bees in your home, and they love taking care. And you're just like, oh my God, I'm on vacation in my own house.
Yeah.
So it's awesome. Like, I love that dynamic. And they all get along, and they all just kind of, you know, he can tell his mom to like stop something, and there isn't a big fight. She's like, okay, you know, because they're so used to it.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, it's for me, it would be such a huge change to be around my family constantly, because I've been such an independent person my whole life.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that for a second, so we can place some context in your background. I think we've just established that you're from Toronto.
Yeah.
Maybe we threw that out there right somewhere in there.
From Sweden.
You're originally from Sweden.
Grew up in Toronto. Yes. Absolutely.
How long were you in Sweden? Let's reestablish.
2 whole years.
The memories.
And then I was sick of it.
The memories.
Packed my bags and I got out.
Couldn't wait to go. Already, the independent streak.
But honestly, my parents split when I was 6. So he went back to Sweden when I was 6, which was kind of amazing. It was horrible at the moment.
Yeah.
But of course, in hindsight, it's amazing because I got to keep my ties with Sweden, because I would
Absolutely.
Go every summer.
Absolutely.
I would get on a plane by myself at 6 years old. Like, my mom would send me off, you know, how they like chaperone
you.
And it was the best experience ever. Like, got to go in the cockpit. I got to help the hostesses serve orange juice. And like, it was so cool. So from sort of a negative experience came so many positives.
Sure.
You know, when I got to keep the ties with Sweden. And, but yeah, most of my time was spent growing up with the crazy Canucks over in Canada. And I loved it. I loved growing up in Canada. It's such a great place, and some of my best friends are over there.
Do you have siblings?
I do. I have 3, but they're all half siblings.
Okay.
So they're all, but they're all younger. So
in Sweden or in Canada?
Well, two of my sisters grew up in Sweden.
Okay.
So my dad remarried, had 2 girls. The one girl is here now.
Okay.
Causing a lot of trouble.
Oh.
As she should be.
Yeah.
And my brother and I, we grew up in Toronto.
Gotcha.
From my mom's side. So
gotcha.
I'm the older, wiser one.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you were flying by yourself.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
that's
totally.
Kind of a
really, really wise.
From very early on. It sounds to me like you might have even flown the plane based on seeing
I
the cockpit.
Have.
I like to
I could
think
have.
That you were, yeah.
Yeah, I totally could have. But, you know, they were a little bit nervous about that, but I could do anything.
I you know what? I'm glad that you believe that you could. That's the right way
to
go.
So I believe that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so was it in the Toronto area? Were you in Toronto proper? Were you in sort of a small...
Toronto proper. And then we went and moved out. The worst timing ever. Moved out to the smallest town, population of like 1,200 people.
Oh, you did? When did you...
When
how
I was
old were you?
12. 12 to 16.
So you were getting ready to look in the juicy metropolitan teenage years in Toronto.
Yep.
Which is a bustling metropolitan.
Yep.
Metropolitan, metropolis.
Yeah.
To the 1,000-person town.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 1,000-person town where all you do is get stoned out in apple orchards. That's about it. There wasn't even a movie theater in the town.
Oh my God.
So it was
okay.
Literally like, I remember being asked, oh, this is so crazy. I went to 4 different high schools when I was a teenager.
Oh, we got to get into that.
So the first high school I went to is now closed down because it was just such a shit show.
Yeah.
But basically it was the biggest drug, like, high school ever. Our cheerleaders would drop acid and go cheer. Like, it was insane.
Timothy Leary's version of high school.
Yeah.
That is
it was
Amazing. Crazy.
You were weird if you weren't stoned in class. Like
that
it was
so crazy.
So I lasted about a year and a half there, and I was like, I can't. Like I'm. This isn't.
Let me back up for a second. What took you from Toronto, your family from Toronto to that small town? Was it just,
you know,
let's
what?
Get
my stepdad at the time mm-hmm. had grown up there uh-huh. and he was an architect and he was getting a lot of work over there and he had sort of gotten his own business and it's a beautiful town, like, you know, for my mom and my stepdad.
Sure.
It was great. And they had my brother who was a baby at the time. So it was kind of like a perfect, they wanted to get a house instead of an apartment. And I guess that was just sort of a good spot. It's only an hour and a half away from Toronto, so they could go back in if they needed to. And
do you remember how you felt when they gave you the news? Like the
real life
news?
I was actually kind of excited.
Oh,
I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I was being bullied at school, so I was.
You were. Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I was bullied
a lot.
What
was up?
I don't know. I was a dork growing up.
Great.
I really was.
You're among friends.
I would
every
sit in the bathroom
and
read, "Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret." Remember?
Oh,
remember
that's so
one?
Funny. We just talked about that on the Jen Kirkman podcast.
Oh, you did.
I want to clarify something.
Yeah.
I just said you're among friends, and then I said every listener and I. I'm not saying all of you guys who I've now come to know and love are dorks. I'm saying you're among friends in that many of us are and embrace even if we're not. I don't exactly. want anybody writing me and saying like, Janet, thank you for calling me a dork.
But I was really cool.
Speak for yourself.
By the way.
Exactly. Yeah. What was the bullying like?
There were different kinds of bullying. There was, luckily I always had like an older friend who was a year or two older who would kind of stick up for me. But yeah, I spent many like recesses in the bathroom stall just reading because I was scared to go outside. But it was literally this one girl who now, you know, as we grow up, we realize she was probably being beaten by her parents or something. Like
of
she
course.
Was just crazy.
Yeah.
She had cut off all her own hair and like, and anyway, so she got all of my friends to turn on me because they were scared of her.
Yeah. I had that too. Like the turn, like,
yeah.
Like,
oh, it's awful.
They flip your friends. Like that's so
it was
evil.
Really weird. And it, for some reason it was me. She was out after me. And you know, I had been in a few like, catalogs, like Sears catalog and stuff. And so everyone was kind of excited. And I guess she was really jealous or whatever it was.
Sure.
She got my friends to turn on me. Like they were scared to talk to me. You could see the fear in their eyes. And I was like, oh my God, what is going on? So she would chase me with scissors at recess.
Mullen.
And say, I'm gonna cut your hair off, you fucking bitch.
Oh like, my.
So it was really awful.
God.
Yeah, it was really crazy. And then at another school, there was a guy who decided he just wanted to pick on me and he'd always steal my hat. During recess when it was winter outside,
oh
he's like,
God.
You're wearing a stupid hat. I was like, but my mom put it on me. You know,
oh,
like it was just like,
no.
Yeah. So I had a lot of bullying. And of course, you know, I've been a skinny, scrawny thing my whole life. So I always got the girl or the guy who were like, hey, look at her. She's the wall, the bone rack, you know,
right,
like all that
right.
kind of thing. And my another girlfriend who used to tease me, she's like, you know what it means? If you have thin hair, it means you're really sick and you're going to die young. Like, it was just like,
what?
I was.
It's so, I mean.
Yeah.
I just don't know where all of this, I mean, we do know where it all comes from because we are talking about, it's got to, you know, be a reflection of what's going on at home.
Yeah,
although,
I think so.
There's still stuff where I feel like now I'm at the age where I have friends who have kids, some of whom even have been surprised and chagrined to find out that for whatever reason, maybe it's because they do get influenced by someone who is angrier than they are and
yeah.
that there's some sort of magnetic attraction, even for a good kid, to be the focus of that spotlight of attention of that sort of magnetic, strange, angry kid.
Yeah.
But that bleeds over into that child's behavior. Because I really do have a lot of faith in my friends who are parents. And if they say, we were horrified to find out that, you know, Jimmy or whoever participated in something
yeah.
and we couldn't even conceive of how that was possible. I mean, I guess no parent is going to be like, oh, I totally expected my kid to be a bully. But
I just,
it's just such a weird social
really
environment and such a weird time for kids to kind of be doing that. And I just, the morality of that, of like, but you're old enough to know that it feels horrible
of
when
course.
Someone does it to you. And a lot of people encounter it and a lot of people feel it and then put it on someone else. And you just wish there was a way to curb that.
I think that's one of the toughest ones is bullying. I mean, because there's so much peer pressure and you're feared into things. Like my friends, they didn't want it, you know, after school or I'd see them on the street, like we'd be normal again. We wouldn't even talk about it.
Mm.
But as soon as we were at school, it was like, what do you do? You know, this girl was probably like, if you don't come with me, then I'm going to like cut your eyes out. Or, you know, what do you, and you believe it when you're a kid. You believe everything. I mean, even to this day, as adults, you kind of get peer pressured into certain things.
I was just going to say that. I was just going to say, I feel like I've been on sets. And guys, I'm not even talking about just, you know, I don't like to only talk about show business. Hence, we talk about being teenagers. But on sets, but also in jobs I had in my 20s when I wasn't in any way pursuing this, just regular kind of corporate-y jobs where you like to think of yourself as the person who's not going to, who would stand up for anything.
Totally.
And it's really insidious. It's like, oh, my boss is really mean to this girl. And I know it's not right, but I don't know how not right it is. Like, is it so not right that I have to quit my job because she's doing this to someone else? Do I say something to someone else? She owns this company, so there is no one to report her
There's always that too.
And you know what I mean? And I would like to say every time I was that I would say, you know, this is inappropriate. That director spoke to that actress and I think it made her uncomfortable.
Totally.
But you just get into this community where of whatever's happening in the moment where you're like, is this...
I know.
Am I... You're like, is it me? You know, there's all that internal stuff going on.
So much more also as an adult because you have a job depending on it is, you know, and I can definitely say that I have been on sets before where I definitely feel bullied into sort of swallowing my integrity or even on the verge of being sexually harassed. And you're like, I feel really uncomfortable right now, but I'm not going to say anything because I might lose my job or like, you know what I mean? Of course, there's a limit. If someone actually grabbed something, or I'd be out of there. But I mean, it's like that fine line where you're like,
very fine
is
line.
This sexual harassment?
Yeah.
Is he just kind of joking? But it's kind of gross, or you know, it's just it's weird, and it I think it happens to everybody in a certain stage of their life or throughout all of life. But I think that's the hardest thing to do is really to be truly 100% committed to your integrity and standing up, because it could mean losing, you know, things in your life that are really important to you. But it's hard to balance it out and figure out what's more important.
I agree. And it's something I feel like, I think it's an interesting topic. And that's why I love the things that end up being a through line through our lives, that where you think of school as the time for bullies, and that's 100% not true. There are places where
it
you
continues.
Go. Yeah. The power structure continues in your jobs. Those of you who are listening in our jobs, when, you know, it's, and you talk about it starts at the top, like that's real.
Yeah.
You can go on a job where it feels like everybody's been treated with respect and, you know, it's a joy and it's heaven, and you feel like everybody's there to celebrate the work, even though it is about money because it's a business.
Yeah.
And then you go to another set where like the executive producer is awful and everyone somehow takes that on and takes it all out and becomes awful to everyone else.
Yeah. Isn't that horrible?
And you think, I don't want to think this is human nature.
Yeah. I know, but it's hard sometimes to like get rid of that energy, especially if it's coming from a higher up. As you probably have experienced and know, it's like when you get to a set, I think the director has so much, like they're the ones who set the pace, set the mood for the set. And if they're a positive light and they're really just kind of strong and full of integrity and you know, really are there for the right reasons, then everyone else takes that on.
Yeah.
But if you get a director, anybody, whoever is the leader at the helm, if they're in any way or shape or form negative or bullying or just manipulative, then everybody, it's a trickle-down effect.
It really is.
Everyone's just miserable, and then everyone goes to the bar a little bit more often. And then everyone comes to work hungover.
And maybe the difference is that, you know, just to take it back to childhood, what you were just saying, maybe the only difference is that whereas your friends after school would kind of just behave as if it hadn't happened, the only difference then becomes that, like, in this environment, everybody is talking about it and still not doing anything about it. Like, at the bar afterwards, when the director's not there, everyone's saying, wow, this is really a nightmare.
Yeah.
I guess we're just going to be in a nightmare until it's over.
Totally. Because you got to get that paycheck, you know?
Oh, it's so interesting.
Yeah.
So that was more... So it was an opportunity for you to leave some of that behind when your parents
said going back to why we started all that.
That's the best thing about this podcast. Yeah. I love the spirals and the tangents.
Oh,
So you were a little excited, like, okay, well, this is a fresh start.
I was super excited, to be honest with you. And at 12 years old, you're not really thinking of the city, or, you know, you're still kind of a homebody.
Great point.
I was a late bloomer. I was still playing with Barbies when I was 12 years old. Like, nice. I was a dork. I really was. And I think I sort of grew up at the end of 13, right? Mm-hmm. Before I went into high school. Then I kind of went like, oh my God, wow. I probably shouldn't play with Barbies anymore, because now I'm really going to get teased and bullied.
But then you had to switch high school so much. So was it like, let's try this high school? And then it turned out to be drug central.
I ended up going, I went to that first high school, which was just way too crazy for me. I cannot believe my thing.
The cheerleaders dropped acid.
Oh yeah, it was awesome. That is kind of incredible. Like, it was just.
That's a movie. You should write about that.
Oh my God. I've got a lot of things I could absolutely write about.
Yeah.
But that was a craziness. And so I was like, all right, I got to get out of here. And then I went to the next school, which was so much fun, and that's
and is this just in different towns in the area?
In the area, exactly. The first one was literally like a 10-minute drive from where we lived. The next one was like a half-hour drive, and I had to take a school bus every morning. But I loved it, and it was great. And that's where I met some of my best girlfriends. And that was more like, you know, regular high school.
Is this all public school?
Public schools, yeah. And that's when I discovered alcohol and nightclubs. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, this is great. Like, this is fun. Because I did not fit. I was like, you know, drugs like acid and stuff always freaked me out. And sure. I was scared of that. But I was like, I can handle alcohol. This I can handle.
Right.
But literally, I guess, you know, not even a year into that school, I randomly, I was at a shopping mall, and they were having this modeling search, Ford models. And I walked in, I was in the audience watching like the runway show of these girls that they had picked out.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the agents from Ford saw me in the audience, and he was like, hey, you could probably be a model. Do you want to enter this competition? It's for like Ford Supermodel of Canada. And I was like, sure. At this point, I was like, anything to get out of this town.
Right,
like, then
right.
I was jonesing.
Yeah.
So I actually picked up and left and went to Toronto that summer by myself, checked in, lived with three amazing gay guys in their apartment, and me had my first experiences at gay bars. And like, that wow. was, I was hooked, because I was like, oh my God, these guys love to dance.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
Yeah. Okay. So how old were you? Like 16? Okay.
Yeah. So 16, I picked up, went to Toronto, and, so I had to start in a new school after that, which was in Toronto, which was great. Mm-hmm. Loved that school.
With your three gay dads.
With my three gay dads, yeah. It was awesome. Doing modeling on the side.
Love it.
Did a little traveling during the summer. I would go to Milan to do some modeling, or Greece or Spain. And it was a great opportunity to go and see the world.
Sure.
Hated modeling, but loved seeing the world.
Yeah.
Because everyone in my whole life had always said I was skinny and skeleton. And then you get into the modeling world and like, you're lose kind a of few fat. Pounds. And you're like, what?
What a twist.
It was such a whirlwind. You're like, wait a second. But all my guy friends are going, getting a body.
Right.
And then the modeling world is like, oh my God, you're so fat. It was so crazy.
And what a weird, I mean, self-esteem issues aside that potentially presents, it's so interesting that you... It's so interesting to me that young, you already came to understand this idea of, this is a job. I'm not into it for the job, but these are the benefits. And like, it just seems so adult so quickly to have to make compromises that way. So right. young, in terms of like, oh, this is a business. And like, I'm doing this for all of these things and I don't have to like this.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I didn't learn those lessons until much later because...
But I think if you're in a job early on that you really don't like, you know, I just knew that this wasn't going to be my career. I wasn't in it. It was great because in Toronto, when you do catalog work, they pay well. So I could pay for my bills and I could pay for, you know, whatever I needed to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
It was better than, you know, working my butt off as a bar back and a bus boy, and
sure.
which I'd done as well, you know, during sure. my high school years. I've done it all. But it was a great way to like, you work a day and that's enough for the whole week.
Absolutely.
So I was like, oh, this is great. Even though these people are ridiculous, Toronto wasn't that way. Like when you do catalog work, they don't expect you to be half the size that you should be.
It's a lot more reasonable.
Yeah, it's a lot more reasonable. But anytime I went to Europe, that's when you really felt it, like you're walking beside skeletons and you're like, oh my God, I do feel fat. Yeah. Let me have another pizza. You know,
well, I mean, that's, I guess that's my question. I know we talked a little bit about this I guess I should say, I mean, it doesn't really matter probably to anyone, but the reason that Malin and I got to know each other is because we did this thing. I've teased a little bit on previous episodes because I'm so excited about it and everybody wants to get the word out. But we did a web series together called Burning Love. So that's what I told you about in one of the intros a few episodes ago, guys. And we had this conversation a little bit at lunch there one day. I think, if memory serves, it was the day that we had to shoot the swimming pool scene because we were all really, really agonizing over the fact that we were in bathing suits. Because we don't necessarily love being in bathing suits.
Nope.
That is not what I certainly don't get paid to be in a bathing suit, nor do I have the body that I would spend a lot of time on if that was what I was being paid to do, because it's a job, to your point. It'd be like, oh, this is, I will spend much more time working out and not eating because this is what I've decided I'll be paid for.
Yeah.
But you were mentioning that that you had that experience with modeling abroad, and I think I asked you this then, but I'll ask it again. Was your sense of self kind of solid enough by that time because you had such a sort of normal, quote unquote, I mean, obviously we know that it wasn't normal in the sense that you were going to Sweden when you were six and stuff like that, but that you had that you were grounded in a very nice non-materialistic way and had a good family. Did you feel like you knew yourself enough to go, this is the longest question ever. You knew yourself enough to go, I recognize that they're telling me that I'm too this or I'm not enough that, mm-hmm. and this is a job and they get to think that, but I know who I am? Or did it make you question kind of your value?
It definitely made me question. I was lucky enough though that somehow in my life I've been really, really lucky with the people that have been around me. Like I had... when you go abroad and you model, they just set you in a room with another girl. So you're like sharing a room basically. Mm-hmm. And every time I was abroad, it was a new girl. And each of them happened to be really cool girls who were a little bit older than me, kind of took me under their wing. So I had always sort of a good role model in that sense. I was definitely strong as a person, but no matter who you are or how strong you are, it's going to affect you at a certain point. And the only time I ever remember where I really did get into a little bit of a rut about body and all that kind of stuff was I had gotten really sick when I was in Spain. I got a really bad, nasty flu.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost a ton of weight. Like I'm 130 pounds now and I went down to about 114 pounds. I was like tiny.
Yeah.
And I remember going into the agency after I'd been sick and they were like, oh, you look great. And I felt emaciated and horrifying. But of course, I was booking all these amazing jobs that I'd never booked before in like really beautiful magazines. And here's catalog girl going, wow, these are nice pictures. And wow, it looks nice. So I kind of, for about a month there, I was like, oh, I'm going to do what everyone else does. I'm going to drink coffee and smoke cigarettes. And when I felt hungry, I liked feeling hungry.
It's power. Like somehow it was power.
A weird,
it's like, this is a sign
thing.
I'm doing something right.
Yeah. It was a weird, and to have everyone around you, but then, you know, luckily I went back to Canada and my agency in Canada said, Malin, you're way too skinny. What happened to you?
Thank God.
And all my guy friends, like I had a really good guy friend who was always just like, oh, you're so beautiful. And I got home and he's like, what is wrong with you? Like, you look ridiculous. And that's when it shook me. It shook me up.
God.
And I was like, yeah, what is wrong with me? This is so stupid. And then I went back to doing like Winnie the Pooh pajamas and Sears catalogs. And I was really happy about it.
Yeah.
But it is, of course it throws you for a loop. And when you're, you know, 16 years old and you hear, you know, Ford Modeling Agency or Elite Models, because I switched over to Elite, it's the biggest agencies and I'm with them and I feel really special being with them. And so it's kind of like you do have to find that happy medium and find that balance. And I think it's constant. And I think, again, thanks to the people that were around me, you know, and having parents who were always promoting independence and, you know, you're your own person. You're not anything that anybody else says you are. And that really stuck with me. And as much as we teeter and, you know, we can have our moments.
Yeah.
Ultimately I was just really lucky that I never really got into any weird eating habits or disorders or, which could have easily happened in that world.
Sure.
You know, but again, I think it's because I never felt like this was going to be a career choice. I was never like, oh my God, I want to be a model. I hated being on set.
Yeah.
It felt like a piece of meat, like standing there and you'd be in a stupid outfit, in a stupid pose, and they'd be talking about, you know, and you're just standing there and you're like, hey guys, like you're just a piece of meat. You really are. And especially at that stage when you're a newbie, they don't care. Like in Greece and Italy, like you're just, you are just a mannequin.
Yeah.
When you become a big model, then you're respected and you get treated really well. Right. But the beginning stages, it's horrible. I hated it. Like talk about having no integrity and no voice. And
yeah, the idea of, because that's tricky too. It's like, above and beyond the modeling aspect of it, anytime any of us take a job, I'm standing this again back out beyond show business because I think it's germane, is this idea of the slippery slope, going kind of talking about the peer pressure thing too, of what situation do you put yourself in where you don't put yourself in the situation with the intention or understanding of how it's going to shape your expectation of how you get treated and how you should treat other people. Like you go to do a thing that just seems like, oh, I got hired for this thing, or hey, I'm going to go do this work, this job in this office. And what you don't realize going in is, oh, what I'm setting myself up for is a situation where there's a hierarchy and I'm going to be treated poorly.
Exactly.
And when you start that young, how much does that bleed into your expectations of how you're treated socially, how you're treated by in relationships?
Yeah.
You know, where you're like, oh, absolutely. I'm just used to standing around and being told what to do and I'm not really getting my own voice.
Yeah.
And now I'm falling in love with, you know, I'm talking about guys too. Like, and a guy has that experience working in a mail room of an agency where everybody treats him like crap. And then he's like, well, now I'm dating this girl and she kind of treats me like crap, but I guess I just get treated like crap.
Right.
That's my role in this.
Yeah, and that is
it's so hard to not, you know, to not be able to like let that sort of sink in and kind of get in your gum up your works opposed to really having to like take the time to step apart from it and go, this is temporary. This is not about me. This is something that I don't want to participate in. I will, you know, show up, be a part of it in the way I have to, and then walk away from that and be a strong, confident person and outside of it and be respectful and not take it out on anyone.
Yeah. And I think some people are lucky enough to be raised with really great, you know, parents who teach them this, and it's easier for them to separate, and some are not.
Yeah.
And that's sort of, you know, I feel like we're doing a therapy session here. It's great. But I think that that's really something that, you know, my husband and I, we do this all the time. We've been together 9 years. We've never fought in our whole life together.
Love it. Throughout
this. But we always do checks where you step back and you go, okay, what's unbalanced in our lives? Mm. What's unbalanced in our relationship? What do we need to work on? And we really treat it like this is just as important as getting a job or as making money or as, you know, whatever it is. But I think it's so important to continually just work on yourself, check yourself, know your worth and what you're worth, and know that the job that you're in, if you're in the mailroom, is not a reflection on who you are as a person. It's just a stepping stone to a greater, you know, a bigger, because that's where you have to start.
Yes.
And that's fine. Everybody started there. You're going to be treated like crap, but you're not a piece of crap. You're actually really strong and you have motivation. You're going to get to the top.
Right.
You know, but it is hard to separate that. And I think it's really, really, really important to always, always, always check yourself and go, all right, how important is this to me? And what am I, you know, is this really who I am? Or is it just a job? Or is it just, you know, and it's easier said than done.
Right.
You know,
But that's why you have to constantly do it. Because it's like a muscle that you have to exercise to make it stronger.
Exactly. And I think that's super equally as important in a relationship to just go, all right, well, are we being a little bit testy with each other? Are we bickering a little bit? Why? Okay, let's get to the bottom of it and let's just talk about it instead of just pointing fingers and going, well, you didn't do this today. Like, you didn't do the dishes. And you're like, it's not really about the dishes. Come on.
Yeah, to have that kind of big picture stuff is so huge too. What it was fun, interesting what you were saying about those moments of feeling valued for your flu symptoms, basically, and how insidious that is. I was just talking about this yesterday with someone because I was playing tennis, and I was talking about how you just sort of get into like the fitness conversations where I was, you know, I like to play tennis in Griffith Park, which, guys, if you don't know, LA is this beautiful, great park that I live right next to, and you can, there's beautiful hiking trails and you see coyote and rabbits and all the stuff that kind of helps you check out from like the work kind of stuff that goes on in the city. And so I was kind of showing my friend like, oh, and then I used to go running up that hiking trail, and all of a sudden I flashed to when I was really doing that most, and I wasn't thinking about it, but all of a sudden I had this memory of, you know, that was a few years ago. And I was like, man, I was like getting up the crack of dawn to go running for 2 hours. And then I was spinning all the time. And then I was, you know, playing tennis all the time. And I was so, here's where I'm going with this. I was so skinny and so fit. And I wasn't even doing it for a job because I've never been paid for that stuff. And it was, and I looked great.
Yeah.
And I was just eating a bunch, you know, it was like I could eat a bunch because I was so active. And I just, but when I really think about it, and I hadn't even really thought about this until yesterday, all of a sudden I was struck with this epiphany where I was like, because I was like, gosh, why don't I have the energy to do that anymore? Like I was so fit and I was even, you know, I was even skinnier and da da da. And guys, I'm pretty skinny. So I'm not saying like, in no way am I saying, but I'm not saying like, I think of myself as overweight or, you know, anything like that. Nor do I think that there's a set weight that anyone should be. And that's kind of what I'm getting at is I was unhealthy. Right. But it's very insidious when you are doing something that makes you look quote unquote better on the outside to other people, but you don't feel good on the inside.
That's
that is so poisonous because then you have this thing to go back to in your mind where you're like, but when I was running all the time and starting to ruin my knees and I just felt motivated, it was like, okay, Janet, why were you doing that? You know what? You were running from something, literally, your feelings.
Yeah, exactly.
You loved exercising and it's better. It's a better thing you could have done, than drinking a bunch or than doing drugs.
Totally.
It's a great addiction, quote unquote. But nonetheless, I was doing that because
for the
I was chasing
reasons.
Something or being chased by bad feelings.
And can I tell you something that was really interesting is when I was a teenager at one of the high schools that I went to, in high school, as we know, like kids can be mean and bullied and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we're very judgmental as teenagers because out of fear or insecurity. And I had a lot of guy friends growing up. So I was so afraid of girls. And anyway, so in this third high school that I went to in Toronto, I had a group of guys that I hung out with all the time. And there was this one guy who was really good looking. And he started dating this girl who was, you know, in our teenage years, we all were like, oh my God, she's really overweight and like fat and not that attractive. And you're really attractive. You know, that horrible like comparison when you're a
surface
kid.
Stuff. Sure.
And surface stuff. And he just looked at us all and he goes, you know what, guys? By the way, I didn't say this because I was so shy in high school that I maybe said two words. Every year. That's it. So I would just listen in and the guys were teasing him and whatever. And he goes, guys, you know what? When she walks out of that bathroom in her bra and underwear, she is so confident and she is so hot. And we're like, oh my God, that's so true. Because if you have someone that you're going to do a little dirty with, you know, how unattractive is it to have someone who'd be like, oh my God, no, don't look at my body. Don't. It's like, if you're already there at that point, this person's attracted to you. So bring it. You know what I mean? And I think, so going back to like, if you feel confident in your own skin, no matter your weight, no matter, you bring that confidence. It is so super
sexy.
Attractive.
I couldn't agree more.
You can be the most beautiful person in the world. If you don't have confidence and self-esteem and have that sparkle and that zest for life, you're not going to be attractive. It's going to last for a minute until you open your mouth.
And there's a difference between true attractiveness and, you know, fronting. Like if you're a stunning woman, but you feel horrible about yourself, or you're a super attractive guy, but you've not taken the time to become anything other than that.
Yeah.
With an essence and an education and a point of view.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to see that. I mean, at least the people that you want to be respected by are probably going to pick up on it, and there's going to be some things falling flat. Let me ask you this. When you were, I mean, it sounds like you were having the experience as a teen because you were getting all of the exposure to the traveling and the sort of multicultural stuff happening. Were you also kind of burying yourself in books as well? Or was there music that you were really loving? Or were you just kind of vibing off of the experience of just seeing these places that were brand new and all that kind of stuff?
Definitely music has been, you know, soundtrack to my life. I was super involved in music. But funnily enough, because you had asked me earlier if I had any crazy poetry and stuff from when
I did. I said, Mom, if you have anything around that you want to like trot out and read, my guest.
I was obsessed. I thought I was a poet. So I would write. I wrote a lot and I I painted a lot. I sketched a lot.
Nice.
So I loved sketching like faces, people's faces.
Oh, you would. That was my next question. Is like, what were you drawn to sketch?
That was my escape. I got from my mother. She's dyslexic and I have that as well. So reading a book to me was stressful.
How frustrating.
Yeah. Now I've learned how to read properly and so that, because literally like I would see a book and you'd open it and the page would just turn into a pattern. Like it would be it'd be really hard for me to see this and I'd skip lines and I couldn't understand, you know, and it just wasn't enjoyable. So I just never did it. Now I've learned like if I put a ruler on the book and then just kind of go sentence by sentence, mm-hmm. then I can see it better mm-hmm. and I won't see that pattern.
So interesting.
Jumping out.
I've never heard it described that way as the idea of just a pattern, but that really makes sense.
It's really weird. It's like it becomes 3D and something jumps. It's like, I don't know if you've ever stared at a stage with a spotlight and someone's in the spotlight.
Yeah.
And for me, if I stare at it long enough, my eyes become fuzzy and it does funny things.
Yes.
That's what it does when I look at a book.
I totally get it.
It's like a fuzzy, weird like pattern that jumps out and I'm like, and I can't see the words properly. So that way you jump.
Yeah.
They jump.
Yeah.
And I don't know what kind of dyslexia, I don't know what that is, but that's what it is.
I'm so pleased that you took the time to describe that because that is a way in for me to understand and visualize your particular experience with it that I've never heard before. I'm really interested.
And it's really strange too because I'll read something maybe 3 or 4 times before I actually understand or get
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I go, oh, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Even a script, you know, and there's a line in it and I'm going, and I'll read it a few times and I'm like, I don't get it. Why is this funny?
And scripts are even harder in a way because they're not as linear. Because there's so much other stuff scattered throughout.
But it's actually easier because the pattern's already there.
It's much wider too.
It's a wider pattern, whereas a book is just like so condensed and then patterns jump out that are not supposed to be there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But it is sort of the reading, and then you'll hear someone else read the line and you go, oh, that's what it says? Why? And it'll be like,
is that
a word
helpful
that
to you? Like when you're learning lines to sort of keep it oral in that sense?
Definitely.
Yeah.
If I can hear someone read my lines, then I'll learn them so much quicker.
Yeah. But you loved music.
But loved music and loved all that kind of stuff. So, but I think just the experience of being out and meeting people, the socialization with a different culture constantly, that was the most interesting. And hearing, you know, hearing their stories and how they grew up and mostly just mannerisms and seeing how they work in the world and how they approach things. And that's sort of how my husband and I met. He didn't speak any English, but we were in a band together. So I watched him, you know, every day in and day out, how he was with the other bandmates. And, you know, he was always so sensitive to people's feelings. And it's
what
amazing.
Was the band? What was the, and how did it form for with,
oh
a,
my God,
with
it was
a non-speaking?
So crazy. Well, it was me and 3 Italian guys. And
I love
it was it. Literally, we were called the Petal Stones, like as in flower petals and stones. I was the flower petal and they were the stones.
Got it.
It was this guy, the guitarist that I met, and he wanted me to help him write lyrics in English because he didn't speak very well. And
where is this happening?
Here in LA.
It is. Okay, great.
So it was just me and the guitarist and the bassist at first, and we were writing music, to make a long story short. And I'd never done music before, by the way, but I was like, oh my God, this would be, I had been here for like almost a year and not gotten one single job. And I was like, oh my God, this would be so much fun. Who doesn't want to be a rock star? Like,
sure,
I'll give it a shot. Why not? I'm in Hollywood. Let's make some dreams
possible.
Come true.
Sure.
So then he was the one who said, well, since you're going to Sweden this summer, we have a drummer in Italy who we only want to work with him. Let's try to convince him to come back to LA. So I was like, sure, I'll come to Italy and hang out and meet this drummer. And that's how we met. So we met in Italy. Convinced him to come back with broken English, you know, broken Italian, I should say. He came back and, you know, like 5 months into being in a band together, we all of a sudden were just like, all right, this is happening. Whatever is happening. It was that great moment of you really get to know someone where actions speak louder than words.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a cool way to get to know somebody.
Yeah.
Because it really is, at the end of the day, what you're saying is not really what you're saying. You know, there's always something behind the words that you're saying.
I'm drawing a very distant and weird and unnecessarily poetic parallel between dyslexia and this idea that you fell in love with someone
and
words
maybe
weren't that important. I'm not saying that that's real, but in a fairy book, in a fairy tale world, somehow there's like a tiny link there that I like.
Sure. I'm sure there is. I'm sure we all function from a place of, you know, if we're visual learners or if we go a lot by instinct or feelings or if we go a lot by intellect, if we're attracted to the intellect of a person, that's what drives us. Or it, for me, it was very much animalistic, obviously. It was just sort of like basic caveman instincts, you know what I mean? Like,
but
he's
look
a man.
How it developed and like became, you know, this really well-run relationship, in the sense that the communication with such limited communication to begin with, to have communication be such a huge key in your relationship. Is he like other men that you found yourself attracted to? When you were a teenager, what were the guys that you were attracted to? Other than adorable gay guys that you could dance with.
Yeah, exactly. That I loved dancing. It was literally, you know, let me say this. Random. They were all random. Everyone was super different.
I feel like that way too a little bit.
Yeah. And I had, but my very first like longtime boyfriend who was with for like 3 years, he was very much like loved being the center of attention. And, you know, he was the outgoing one. He was the one who was out there. And like, just, my husband was very shy and like just very much about, I don't even know what he was about, but it was very different than anyone I'd ever been with. All these guys, they were more showy guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they were always quite jealous or possessive. And my husband is the complete opposite. He's super independent, not jealous, and which you can't have a jealous husband.
Do you feel like it made, was there a piece of that made you feel precious in that way? Like that's sort of how the attractive side of a jealous person shows itself, is like, wow, I really, you know, I'm so important to this person,
sure,
that
yeah.
I can't stand the thought
exactly.
of, and then it just quickly
you
spirals into like, oh no, this is really unpleasant. And like, now you're just unhappy and now I'm unhappy all the
time. Mad at me because I'm talking to a dog, literally a dog, and it's a male. It's, but I like, what do you know what I mean? Like, it got to the point where I was like, oh my God, this is crazy.
That's amazing.
And I can't, it's so unattractive to me, jealousy.
Yeah.
And especially like guys are out at bars and you're like, you're talking to my woman. And it's like, first of all, he didn't know I was your woman. You know what I mean? Like, and they just get so crazy. But this is, that guy is the guy who I met at this high school in Toronto and ended up going to, he was half Italian. His parents, his mom was Italian, his dad was German, but he was like, he considered himself Italian. It was like that. We called them Ginos in Canada. He was Gino. And so we ended up, he left to go to a different school, a Catholic school. And because he was a jealous person, I in turn became jealous as well. And I was like, oh no, you're not going to go to a school with girls in uniforms and I'm not going to be there. So I went, had a meeting with the principal and lied and said I was Catholic, raised Catholic.
Is this the fourth high school?
This is the fourth high school.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad we came back to this.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh, this is genius. Okay.
No idea what Catholicism meant. I was raised Buddhist by my mom. So I was like, yeah, I was Catholic. Like, Hail Mary. Yeah. What?
Like it's God save the queen.
Totally.
Like people just say it in conversation, like Hail Mary.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Amen. Thank you very
much. That's amazing.
God bless. Like, no idea, but somehow smuggled my way into this Catholic school. Got my little uniform. Like on Ash Wednesday, which I still don't really know what that is, they came around and put ashes on my forehead. I was like, what are you doing? They're like, it's Ash
Wednesday. You're supposed to know. You're supposed to know, Mullen.
Yeah, okay. I don't know what that means. But it was literally like it was me. I was the only blonde person in that school, like naturally blonde, let's put it that way. Everyone else was Spanish or Italian. And then me, like sticking out like a sore thumb. And it was just, it was great. Like the people there were actually really nice. Like I had a really good time. But it was just the wrong move to go there because of a boyfriend.
I can't believe you followed, in high school, you followed a boy, not to university, not to the big city, but to a private Catholic school.
Yeah. And a less.
That's amazing.
Educationally, like as far as standard, I was in a really great school in Toronto and went to a lesser school, let's put it that way, like less appreciated school. But I was really happy because, you know, in the end, I ended up getting good grades, and that was the last year of high school. So I ended up getting into a good university that I wanted to get into. But But it was just the silliest. That was the silliest thing I've ever done, is like literally gone out of jealousy.
That's amazing.
To the like that I to the point where
that
I
lied. That is another movie. Catty. Guys, do not steal Mullen's ideas. They are being said on this podcast and recorded, and therefore,
so
I mean, I'm going to steal them. Don't get me wrong.
We'll just write it together.
We wrote it together on the podcast. But that is also just an amazing.
I've done a lot of those kind of things where I've just like, my best friend and I, we decided at 3 o'clock in the morning after, I won't name any names, but I guess we were kind of groupies for a minute, but we met this band they were in Toronto. They were a big band and we met them sort of backstage and randomly she met the singer and I met the drummer. Oh, it was a drummer.
God, I'm dying to know what this band was.
And literally, I'll tell you off the record.
All right. Sorry, guys.
But basically, it was like this big festival and we got backstage. Somehow we lost each other. And during this time, she met the singer and I met the drummer. And both of them had asked us to come to Detroit that was their next stop.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to be there for 3 days. And I was like, oh, I can't. My friend is here somewhere. Because he was like, get on the tour bus with us. Let's go. And I was like, oh my God, I can't. My friend is here. I can't just leave her. I don't know where she is. And at the end of the night, we met up and we both had that moment. We're like, oh my God, you'll never believe what happened.
Ah!
And not only that, but it was the singer and the drummer of the same band. And there were like five different bands.
Oh, that's so
funny. So 3 o'clock
funny.
In the morning, their
that's,
tour bus
I would
already
take that
left.
As a sign. I would be like, that is serendipity. It's just,
we did. So 3 o'clock in the morning.
And you'd always wanted to visit Detroit. I'm sorry.
Always.
I just couldn't resist that. Detroit, I love you.
It was my dream. My dream. So we get in the car at 3 o'clock in the morning. We drive to Detroit. We check into a motel. We're like, we got to get some sleep, man. We can't meet up with them like this. We haven't slept at
right.
all. We get like 4 hours of sleep. We call them at 8 a.m. We're like, hey, so we're on our way to Detroit. Meanwhile, we're like taking showers. And so we meet them and we spend 3 days in Detroit with them.
Oh my gosh,
and had the time of our lives. We
you
ended up like actually dating them separately, you know, for a while. And it was amazing.
So they
so
weren't
fun,
just total rascals? Like,
no,
were they
were
seeing
up?
They weren't seeing, like, they didn't have like a girl in every port.
No, they weren't seedy at all. Like the one guy that the drummer that I had met, he had just broken up with a girlfriend of like 4 years. And like, they were really, really lovely.
Well, you like
guys.
A drummer. That's not random.
Yeah, I know, right?
We got a couple drummers in there. I gotcha.
Oh my God. But
I gotcha.
Like things like that. I've had a lot of fun in my life that way. Like I've definitely sort of on a whim just decided to do things and spontaneous and I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's never been to the point where it was dangerous. I mean, it could have been, you know, I'm sure at certain moments in my life, but that's always been. So I guess the Catholic school thing was kind of one of those as well, where I was like, well, I'm just going to do it. Why not? You just
I
do
love it.
Whatever you want to do, you just go and you get it done.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to get a uniform. I'm going to be Catholic and I'm going to be with my boyfriend.
It's so interesting too, because it feels like all of these different anecdotes that you've told feel like such great training for a future actor, because you're sort of trying on all these different roles, like and now I'm going to be the girl who goes to go to Detroit for this drummer for 3 days. Now I'm the girl who goes to Catholic school. Now I'm the girl who's getting on the plane to go to Sweden. And
totally,
I mean,
you're
right. Really are. You're just like a sponge for all of these different types of people and all of these exchanges that you're having and this understanding of kind of humanity in a very broad way, in a way that a lot of us don't get to experience at that age, because we're very isolated in this one community of people for this amount of years and then this other one for this amount of years, and it's more of steps, whereas you got to kind of, you know, slingshot yourself all over the place and collect all of that stuff and kind of put it away somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, since we know that music is important to you. What are you, no one likes being put on the spot, but are there bands that you're really excited about that you're listening to right now, or somebody you just went and saw that's kind of on your mind?
I love, like, there's a lot. I have such a random sort of versatile array of music that I like, but I through and through, I really am a rock and roller. Like, I just, you know, anything for, like, I really like all the old hair band rock, you know, Led Zeppelin and like AC/DC and Metallica and all the things, all those guys, the guys that I grew up on. But I love all the new stuff that's coming out, that, you know, like, Broken Bells and the Black Keys are awesome.
Black Keys.
I love them.
Talk about something that feels like it transcends time and space,
really,
in terms of a sound.
It feels a little bit like the new age Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, I see that
whenever
for
Jonesy, who was the singer of Sigur Rós. I love his sound. It's so cool.
Me too.
Radiohead, you can never go wrong with.
Sure.
I like, there's, if you guys have not heard of this woman, she's sick. It's Carrie Ann Hurst.
Carrie Ann Hurst.
Okay. The song is Hell's Bells. That's my favorite song of all time.
Okay. Yeah.
I love stuff like that. I love just, you know, random. There's so many great independent singers, bands that are out here in LA, especially. Yeah. Fun to see these bands. There's one called Fair to Midland that I saw before they were even signed.
Yeah. I feel like I've heard Fair to Midland.
They're amazing. They really, really are.
I have so many awesome listeners who have excellent taste in music. I know that I'm going to get some really great tweets from people who are like, Malin just turned me on to like six bands that I can't stop listening to.
I hope so. Yeah. There's so many great ones. And of course, as soon as you ask me, I'm like, oh God, I can't think of any of
You've
them.
You've already been naming
Regina Spektor.
Yeah, she's amazing.
You can't go. Like, she's a true artist.
She's amazing.
Kind of unbelievable. But yeah, I mean, so, and then there's also like Etta James and Edith Piaf and Charlotte Gainsbourg, who I love. And,
yeah.
You know, so it can range from anything. Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and, you know.
The lady loves music. You love the music.
So really anything.
I love that. What was, do you have Pedal Stones like tracks sitting around somewhere?
They're on iTunes.
Well, I'm definitely.
Oh, you can find them.
Oh,
on
I am
iTunes.
Definitely putting one of those on. I feel like I need to have like a sampler. I feel like I need to provide a free like Urban Outfitter style sampler CD to the Malin podcast episode. What if I end up playing? Well, first of all, I will play at least part of a Pedal Stones song. What one should I get off of iTunes that I could put on here?
I have two, and you can listen to them, and you can decide which one you prefer. All right. I would say either Poison, which there's also a YouTube video to.
Okay, nice. We'll link that up on the Facebook page.
Students from the New York Film Academy did it way back in the day, which was awesome.
I'm loving every moment that's happening right now.
And the other one is Free. Free. Okay. It's either Free or Poison. Those were sort of like our songs that were kind of like our thing. And mind you, this was back in 2003, and it was right when like Evanescence and Linkin Park were really for us were really big and new age, and so that those were our inspirations.
And now, has any of that, because obviously we know that you were a big poet back in the Toronto days as well, was your poetry social, was it like this is all the wrong that's happening in the world, was it a little of everything, was it like this is about a guy you broke my heart, was it like no one understands
me? Sure, there was a lot of like, it was a lot of guys. It was all very sort of dark, and it was definitely inspired by, Jim Morrison.
Okay.
Like very like doesn't really isn't it's metaphorical.
I'm
more
taking
so
you on
anything.
A journey with
like,
this poem.
Totally. I was in love with Jim Morrison. Like I just loved. I had all his poetry books, and I was just like, oh my God.
You know what? I hated him.
You did?
Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
I don't know what I just thought
My
he was
too,
so yeah like I because I and listen I'm not saying that I didn't have crushes on people that were or were not geniuses early on. For some reason for me, I just was like, he is so pretentious. Like I just got in my mind that I had figured out that he was a phony.
Right.
I don't know where that came from.
I don't know.
I really don't. You know what it probably came from? I'm sure someone I liked was like, he's a phony. And I was like, yeah, I think that too.
Yeah, totally.
Because I don't even remember where that developed, but I remember being like, ugh, he's one of them Jim Morrison types. Like
oh
I was
God,
so dismissive
funny.
Of it. I don't really even feel that way anymore. But for some reason,
that's
when so I was funny. A teenager, I was like, I don't have time for that. But then like somehow, you know, Robert Smith's lipstick was like super authentic.
I love it.
Like, I mean, you know, there's no real like through line there. It's not like I was listening to Bob Dylan saying Jim Morrison was no good.
Right.
I was listening to someone who's like way worse of a songwriter than Jim Morrison.
Bob Dylan is amazing though.
He is amazing.
I mean, that's all the words, you know, his wording is kind of unbelievable, but he was more revolutionary. He was more, I think Jim Morrison was just on a drug train. You know what I mean? And I was like, woohoo, cool. But there's some great.
And by the way, all of my poetry, way more like what you're describing and what Jim Morrison did. So even on top of everything
you
else,
hypocrite.
On top of every judgment, I totally was writing like, the flowers of the morning are much like the night where the da 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 da. Like, just
sort
like
of what it was.
Feel it, see it.
It was,
you know?
Like, I remember one was called Evil Legacy.
Oh,
and that was like,
love it.
It was, or, I have one that was like Force, and I was like, rejoice the sadness. Oh my God, I so had it on the way here. Gorgeous. I was trying to think of it.
This is gorgeous.
Oh, sweet infant born blind of the bad, rejoice the sadness, this world has gone mad. That was the kind of stuff that I was.
Whoa!
So it was like that kind of like.
That's not too shabby.
Intricate, like yeah. I'm super deep and like.
Listen, it also rhymed, so yeah, that's saying a lot.
Yeah. It was kind amazing. Of like cheese bally. It was amazing.
We are at an hour. I could talk to you for ages longer, but I know you have somewhere to be, so I'm much to the chagrin of myself and I'm sure the listeners, because this flew by. Thank you so much for doing the podcast. I can't believe we're able to end it on a morose poem that you did remember from high school. That yep. is brilliant. I got to do my homework on this one, because I've got songs to look up, I've got things to add, I've got stuff. Maybe I'll play some stuff at the beginning of the podcast, maybe some stuff at the end. But thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
We have a little, now we've cemented your birthday weekend with like an actual thing that, that you'll have to keep forever and ever. I'm turning this into the most, my gift to you is you doing my podcast. Wow, Janet. Wow. Malin, thank you so much again.
Thank you.
And, we'll see you guys next time on the podcast.
Leaving Nerdist.com.